This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. It's a rainy, foggy, Seattle-looking day here in Toronto. So let's talk some hockey, cheer ourselves up a little bit. And speaking of being cheered up, the New Jersey Devils won the lottery. It's like they made a deal with the devil. And they'll pick first. So what I'm curious about, guys, is, I mean, I think we've talked about the Devils a lot as one of the most doomed teams in terms of short-term future, like a long way away from being competitive. But how much does winning the lottery accelerate their trajectory in your mind right now?
I don't think it does a whole lot. As we've said countless times already, and we're certainly not alone as a publication in this, this is an okay draft. Compared to the past couple we've had, it's not great. I would suspect Nolan Patrick to go straight to the NHL, you know, assuming he's healthy. Like, health has been his problem the last year and a half. But if he's ready to go, you have a kid who's a late birthday, so he's going to be 19 by the time the season actually begins. He's got size, he plays defense, and he can put up a bunch of points as a center. Maybe they even start him on wing if they feel that's necessary. But, you know, he can help the Devils, but he can't do everything, and he can't fix all of their problems, which include just a disastrous blue line and still not a lot of high-end scoring outside of Taylor Hall and, to a lesser extent, Kyle Palmieri. So I think it's great for the Devils, but it's certainly not a cure-all.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said, Ryan. I don't think this really moves the needle at all, at least in the short term. I mean, you know, they are one of the worst teams in the league. So, yeah, whether they pick Nolan Patrick or Nico Hischier first overall, that player will, at the very least, I would say, play the 9 games next year, and they'll see what he can do. But like you said, Ryan, they're not getting a Connor McDavid or a Jack Eichel or anything along, like, even close to those lines right now, you know. And that just makes this draft normal. That just makes it a regular draft. Like, this kid isn't going to come in and score 40 goals next year the way Austin Matthews did, but nobody ever does that. So, I think it's great for the Devils that they got the first pick. I think it will help them down the road, whether they pick, like you say, a Patrick or a Hischier. But in the short term, it doesn't. I don't think it moves the needle at all.
Yeah, that's right. And the problem is too, I mean, they got the better player in the Taylor Hall trade. I don't care what any Edmonton fan says. Sorry, guys. But at the same time, it's not like the Devils really had an Adam Larson to spare. Like, their blue line was already pretty barren. Yeah. And sure, you take the offer. If you're offered Taylor Hall, you take it. But they were already pretty depleted on the decor. So because you're not getting a defenseman, obviously you're not picking it. You're not picking a Cale Makar or a Miro Heiskanen with that pick. It's going to be Hischier or Patrick. It means that the Devils' greatest weakness will not be fulfilled in this draft. So I still think they're years away. They're going to, you know, they're starting to amass a nice little group of forwards, Pavel Zacha, Mikey McLeod. But I still think they don't have that front line forward. They might not have it in this draft, and they obviously don't have anything close to a front line defenseman. So to me, the Devils, I put them on that short list with probably Vancouver and Colorado as teams furthest away from really being a contender.
Well, is this, so then do you look at a situation where maybe they trade down to get somebody? You know, maybe they trade down with somebody, and somebody who really wants one of those guys, you know, steps up and offers a package that includes one or two players that can step in and help them right away.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you look at this draft, I don't see a ready-to-go defenseman in that sense. There's no Seth Jones. There's no Aaron Ekblad.
Yeah, there's no Provorov.
You know, Makar and Heiskanen have fantastic potential, but I think you want to see them at least do another year of developing. Makar at UMass was where he's committed to, and Heiskanen back in Europe. If anything, and you know what, I should say with the Devils, I'm trying to think of their best defense prospects, and the only name I'm coming up with right off the hop is Igor Rykov, who plays in Russia. He was at the World Juniors. He's an offensive defenseman. I think he's one of those blue liners where the puck's going in one of the nets when he's on the ice.
High event.
You just don't know which one.
You're not sure which one, but a lot of the times it's the enemy's net, so that's good. But I'm not saying that he's even on their radar. I'm not sure what his contract situation is in Russia right now. They might have to wait a while for him. So I think for the Devils, you kind of play it long, and you go with Patrick or you go with Nico Hischier, and you try to fill out elsewhere, because I think they need help on defense right now, and it's got to be a player who's been in the league for 5-6 years or more. Mm-hmm. And you probably need at least two of those guys.
Mm-hmm. And to me, the Flyers are interesting because they're a team that they're kind of close on the playoff bubble. They've got that young group of defensemen that keeps coming, and Samuel Morin's on his way as well. Travis Sanheim, guys like that. Provorov's going to be even better next year.
Felix Myers
made huge strides.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm excited for the Flyers if I'm a Flyers fan, especially if the Devils take Hischier, because if Patrick falls to number two, that's a guy I think can slot into the Flyers lineup next year and be relatively insulated playing behind Claude Giroux on the depth chart, Sean Couturier. I think Patrick would be a nice fit. More from the Flyers' perspective, he could help them be good right away, and maybe the Flyers start creeping back into that playoff picture next year.
Well, and they should. I mean, they were good enough to make the playoffs this year. You know, I mean, what were they, the first team to win 10 in a row and not make the playoffs at one point in the season? So, I mean, and they were on the door. They were knocking on the door the whole time, but they've got some flaws. I mean, they've got to get their goaltending sorted out and a lot of other things. So, yeah, I mean, that does sound like a really good situation for a Patrick or maybe even a Hischier. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. For me, I think I haven't seen a lot of either of these kids. You've seen way more of them, but the sense I'm getting from scouts is that the ceiling for Hischier is higher than it is for Patrick. Mm-hmm. And to me, in a draft that's so uncertain, I'm going to try and hit the home run.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, it's Hischier. But
yeah.
I'm with you.
I think the Flyers were the real winners of this draft lottery, going from 13 to 2.
Woo!
Yeah. No team has ever made that big a leap,
Colorado,
to my knowledge. Yeah, and for them, as you say, like, their forward core is already very good. Getting a goaltender this summer seems to be like it's not going to be that difficult. There's a lot of big names out there. There will be trades to be made. Obviously, you got to toss Vegas in there, but
they're also in the running for Spencer Foo as well. The
free agent.
The free agent from Union. So
right.
If he went to Union, he's automatically going to be
exactly.
There's a good possibility he's going to be playing for the Flyers.
Yeah.
So.
Home of Ghost Bear and Mike Vecchione.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's another sort of guy to add to the mix and the melting pot and everything,
And as you said, they have tons of great young blue liners coming up. Some have already played games. Some have already made contributions. They kind of have that luxury where they can cycle those players in now. So, I mean, for me, if you add a good goaltender, whether it's Ben Bishop, I doubt Marc-Andre Fleury is going there now, but, you know, somebody of that ilk, all of a sudden you should be able to compete in that division.
You know what's nice, too, is to see it happen to a guy like Ron Hextall, who is, like, he would be so anti-tank, you know?
Right,
he'd be a guy that would be like, not a effing chance I'm tanking and losing games on purpose and doing shitty
guts
so I can get a high pick. And,
yeah.
Like, that would just go against everything that Ron Hextall stands for. He wants to win games and he wants to try and make the playoffs and do all those things. So it's nice to see, you know, a team like that get rewarded, and now they're going to get a good pick anyways.
Mm-hmm. And he and his scouting crew have done an excellent job the past couple of years. You think about the value they've gotten. Travis Konecny, getting him late in the first round. As we said before, Philippe Myers, a free agent. They didn't even have to draft him.
Yeah,
crazy. You know?
Nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. They had 9 guys at the World Juniors this year, and that's not counting Konecny, who was busy playing for Philadelphia. I think they've done a great job, and it is nice to see them get rewarded in the bouncing of the balls.
Mm-hmm. Right. Another team that got rewarded, and they inspire a kind of kooky idea on my part. So Dallas moved up to 3rd in the lottery, and to me, you look at the Dallas Stars, they don't need young defensemen. They've got tons of young defensemen prospects, Honka, Lindell, etc. Their forwards are win now forwards. Jason Spezza is getting old, which is weird because he's my age. Oh man, I hate saying that. Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, clearly in their primes right now. So to me, I look at this draft, and if I'm Dallas, I say, you know what? This is the time to dangle the number 3 pick. We know we need goaltending, so why don't you go to New Jersey and you say, hey, would you guys like the 1st and 3rd pick this year in the draft? Give us Corey Schneider. By the time you guys are good, Schneider is going to be leaving his prime anyways. Schneider can make us good right now. We can get right back into the playoffs. What do you think of that idea?
Well, yeah, it's it, in theory it looks good, and in fantasy hockey league it looks great. But I, what do you do with the two guys you have that you're paying more than $10 million to and are taking up all that cap space that nobody wants? Mm. Well, I mean, what do you do with those guys?
Literally.
They have 1 year left on their deal each, so those are much easier guys to move than they were a year ago. Maybe you find another Coyotes, a team that's a salary floor team, and say, hey, can you take 1 year of Antti Niemi from us? Please, pretty please. That'd be my move.
Yeah. I'm going to say it's a kooky idea, because if I'm Ray Shiro in New Jersey, I say, this is not a great draft, and you want me to have how many of the top picks in exchange for my best player? I think there's a deal to be made for a goaltender in Dallas, but I think for the Devils, they just say, we're happy with where we're selecting, we're going to keep going on this route, and... Then you got to hold out some hope for Corey Schneider that he's going to see playoff hockey before he moves on to the next team in his career if he decides to. I think if you're going to get a goalie, it's later in the draft than that pick, or you're flopping picks with a team, but it's not New Jersey.
Speaking of goalies, I'm hearing that Calgary is hot on the trail for Ben Bishop's.
Oh yeah.
Negotiating rights, and that they're really trying to get that, mm-hmm. and you know, obviously with the intention of signing him before next year,
which makes sense because they almost had him last year, right? They were close to acquiring him, and I think even Bishop was open about that, right? He spoke about it, and I think they almost were like, you know what, can we have a do over on Brian Elliott? Like, that's sort of the message it seems to send.
We took the wrong ex Blues Senators goalie. that played college hockey.
That's right.
And got traded a couple of times before he got good.
That's right.
And his name starts with B.
Switching gears to teams that are in the playoffs and still alive, for now, the Washington Capitals.
For now.
They're down 2-0, lost both games at home to Pittsburgh. It's a weird series, though, because they're, in terms of the flow of play, they're out shooting Pittsburgh. They're kind of, it's very similar to Minnesota in the first round against St. Louis, where they should be winning based on how they're playing, but it's just not happening. And Marc-Andre Fleury is outplaying Braden Holtby. So are you guys declaring the Capitals dead right now, or do you think that the domination and the possession play is eventually going to work in the Caps' favor?
I'm declaring them terminal. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, does anybody see Pittsburgh
coughing up,
choking this thing up now? Like, no. if they were playing somebody else, I would say, yeah, they could come back and win this series, win essentially four of the next five games, right?
Yeah.
I'd say they could do that, but not against these guys. Yeah. Not against these. They're not going to let that happen. No. Like a Mike Sullivan coach team, a team led by Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, they're not going to let that happen. They won last year. They are the Stanley Cup champions and may very well end up being the Stanley Cup champions again this year, the way things are turning out. Mm-hmm. I don't see Pittsburgh letting that happen under, like, any circumstances.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, Washington, for the duration of the playoffs so far, even dating back to the Toronto series, was the team with, like, zero chill. They had the most to lose, and they struggled with that pressure.
They were nervous. I found them nervous talking to them when they were here for the series. They were, like, jittery and...
Oh, yeah. I said last week, it was a surreal scene. After the Toronto series, like, all the owners were in the room, hugging with players, taking pictures, posing for... Like, it just seemed like, boys, like, act like you've been here before.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, act like you've done this before. This is nothing.
Yeah.
I remember, like, Alex McGillney, when he came to Toronto, they had knocked off Ottawa in the second round of the playoffs. And it was his first year in Toronto, and he had just won the Cup in New Jersey and stuff, and like everybody was losing their shit, right? Because it was Toronto and they got to the conference final. And we're talking to McGillney, and McGillney like looks around, like, and he's like, he's truly and like truly like bewildered and confused by this. And he goes, "What the hell is this? Like, why is everybody so excited? We're only halfway through the playoffs."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, we haven't done a damn thing yet. Yeah. And that's kind of what the sense I got from Washington.
Yeah, and I totally agree with Pittsburgh. Like, you know, Sidney Crosby, he's a calm customer. Like, he knows what needs to be done, and that system in Pittsburgh, they've got that speed, they just plunk guys in. I just see them, whatever the opposite of zero chill is, maximum chill,
yeah, maximum perhaps. Chill.
The Penguins have maximum chill.
I mean, they
chill.
Are Penguins.
Well, and their GM has cojones the size of coconuts, for Christ's sakes. Like, get real.
Yeah.
He's you know, he has to trade one of his goalies, and he's everybody's saying,
yeah,
you got to trade Marc-Andre Fleury before you know.
He's playing expansion draft chicken.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously he's got something worked out here, but like, what do you do now if Fleury like keeps playing like this and they win that cup?
Yeah.
Holy smokes! What the heck are we gonna do about our goaltending here? But I mean, imagine Jim Rutherford doesn't do that and he gives in to the. You know, he gives in to all the pressure and trades them away to, you know, whomever for whatever.
Yeah. Where are they now?
Where are they now?
Yeah.
That's right. And what's interesting is, you know, without naming names, but things I've heard through the grapevine about Fleury is that he was never that close to being traded this year. Not nearly as close as it was played up to be in the media.
Yeah.
And if there was a good deal for him, they might have made the deal. But they were pretty content to play expansion draft chicken, and they wanted to hold on to him for this exact reason. And I guess also seeing Matt Murray hurt his thumb earlier in the year, he's starting to have show a bit of signs of being an injury-prone guy.
Yeah, a little bit.
So I think and because they're in win-now mode, they just want that insurance. So I guess credit to Rutherford now it's hindsight 2020 for us, but good for him for having that foresight.
But it's also interesting because we've talked about Chicago many times and how Stan Bowman, people say, oh, they keep getting in cap trouble. No, it's not cap trouble when you win the Stanley Cup.
Exactly.
It's just managing the salary cap.
Yeah, he manages the hell out of it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they had to trade Dustin Byfuglien. It's like, yeah, but they won the Stanley Cup again. Who cares?
Yeah, it's the trade-off.
That's what you're seeing with Rutherford. It's like, oh, no, what if they have two amazing goaltenders going into the Stanley Cup playoffs? It's like, well, then they might win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
That's a terrible problem. It's like, what if they lose Fleury for nothing? It's like, well, they might win the Stanley Cup. And if they lose Fleury for nothing in the summer, then they lose him. But right now, it looks like a great move, and yeah, got to tip your hat to him.
That's right. The other team looking good on the east side of the bracket, Ottawa. The Ottawa Pajots, I guess. They're not just the Ottawa Carlsons anymore. They're the Ottawa Pajots. I can't stop going back to this because I can't find a way to respect the Senators' chances of going deep, but they just keep proving us wrong. And at what point do we have to say, okay, fine, you're good, you're pretty good, fine, it's fine.
The system works. Yeah. Well,
right about now might be a good time.
Yeah.
Right about now might be a good time. I don't think they're that good.
Like, if they play Pittsburgh, come on.
Who knows? I mean,
anything
at all. I mean, really, seriously, I mean, the way they play the game, like, they're not going to get sucked in by Pittsburgh's speed, because they play so patient, and they play, you know, they're actually content to do a -3/8/4 check, you know, like it's not like a 1/4. It's not like it. Like it's like,
yeah.
You know, they have guys like waiting behind their own net on the forecheck. Like, so they're not going to get really sucked in by that speed, I don't think. And I mean, they could make a series of it, but I mean, they're a team that obviously. I mean the job that Boucher has done coaching this team is incredible. There's not a team in the NHL that relies on one player more than this team relies on Erik Karlsson. And that's what you need in the playoffs is depth guys to do the things that Pajot did on Saturday afternoon. And I don't know. I mean, they just seem to be clicking on all cylinders, coming together defensively. Like, they've got, you know, a couple of no-name guys. And now they're getting the contributions like you know, I mean, Bobby Ryan you know, Stone and Hoffman are still, in my mind, better than, like, for all the depth that New York has at forward, I think Stone and Hoffman are still better than anybody that New York can put out there.
And I think that's a good point, especially Stone and Hoffman. I do think the Senators are getting great buy-in from their forwards on the defensive side of the puck. So maybe they don't have an all-star decor other than, of course, Erik Karlsson, but guys like Stone and Hoffman, especially Stone. Stone, it's like he'll never win a Selke because he's a winger, but he's one of the most underrated two-way players in the game. And you never know. I mean, Yuri Lehtonen used to win Selkies, so maybe one day Stone will.
Yeah, I don't think he skates as well. I don't think Stone gets around.
That's definitely his main weakness. Yeah. But he's so crafty. He's always up there among the takeaway leaders. He might have finished first this year. I forget if it was him or maybe even Karlsson. I have to look it up. But either way, I think that's been a big difference for Ottawa in these playoffs. It doesn't always look pretty, like you said, under Boucher, but they're a responsible team both sides of
the like, transition. Like, are you kidding me? This team on transition is downright scary. Like, they just wait and wait and wait, and then they get the puck, and then it's just...
Pew!
It's, yeah, I mean, their transition game is something to behold.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, that structure that Guy Boucher has put into place. I remember speaking with associate coach Mark Crawford during the regular season, and I half cheekily? Yeah. Said, I want to do a blog about how you guys are winning. How are you guys winning? Like, none of us can figure it out. And that structure was a big part of it. Everybody knows their role, and particularly on defense, everything kind of, like, lined up this season where it's like, okay, we know Erik Karlsson is number one. We know Mark Method is number four. CeCe and Phaneuf are two and three. Everybody knows what their roles are. And obviously, you know, injuries have moved things around in the playoffs. But it's like you guys said, that buy-in is there. And I guess maybe we should have seen it happen because the playoffs is when things tend to get buckled down a bit. So a team that's really good in structure and knowing their roles, and with a goaltender, as I like to say, this is a good Craig Anderson year.
Yeah, yeah.
It does kind of fit into place. And now the question is just, you know, how much further can they go?
Mm-hmm. And going into these playoffs, all-time NHL leaders in playoff save percentage, Braden Holtby, number one, Craig Anderson, number two. Make of that what you will, because, I mean, Holtby hasn't... Well, I mean, Holtby was pretty good against the Leafs, but, you know, not doing as well right now. Another little piece of news over the weekend. It seemed like an inconsequential trade, but it could be an important trade when all said and done. Carolina gives up a third-round pick to bring in Scott Darling. And I don't know what to make of this trade. Like, giving up a third-round pick, it's clear that they want Darling to be their starter if they're going to surrender a third-rounder. It also means they can expose Ward and Lack in the expansion draft, which I'm sure they're hoping one of those guys will get claimed. And Darling has been excellent. He's been one of the best backup goalies in the league. But the question to me is Darling a starting caliber NHL netminder? Part of me wonders if he was... We would have seen that, or it would have happened earlier in his career.
But he's been a real late bloomer, Matt. He's
yeah, so that's the question. Is he a Tim Thomas, you know?
He might be. But I mean, the first thing is Carolina has to sign him. I mean, and you would think...
Yeah, for his rights.
Yeah, you would think that they're going to do that if they were willing to give up a third-round pick.
Come on,
you would think
Scott!
You think they've got a plan in place that they're gonna ink him to a deal. I share all of those concerns because... He's really, really good when he's really good, and when he's not good, he's really not good, you know? And there appears to be some real wild fluctuations in this guy's play. But Scott Darling is an interesting case because he's a classic, classic late bloomer. Like, this guy basically was booted off the University of Maine team because he was a drunk. You know, he drank too much. And he'll tell you. I mean, he did some very self-destructive things early in his life. And he found himself in the Southern Professional League, in the East Coast League. And I remember I was talking to a guy who played in one of those, for one of those teams that when he first came back, and they were looking at him going, who the hell is this guy? And then the next thing you know, he's just making his way up. And it goes to show you that when someone gets their life on track and decides that they want to be, as you know, the best that they can be, that they can get results. And especially if they have, you know, some natural gifts, and he's a big guy, he's a big talented guy. If I'm Carolina, I mean, you're not really, you're kind of mucking around right now, so why not give it a shot and see what happens? Because, you know, who knows, maybe you have the next, I don't know, Dominic Hasek on your hands. I doubt it. But, you know, maybe you have the next Ben Bishop on your hands. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the key will be, you know, assuming Carolina signs him, is they got to give him the minutes. I think one of the big problems with Carolina this past regular season was Bill Peters clearly had a lot more faith in Cam Ward than he did in Eddie Lack. We know we famously called out Eddie Lack at one point.
Yeah.
But I know...
Stop the puck!
Yeah. I know, you know, a lot of Carolina... Hurricanes fans were just tearing their hair out seeing Ward start time and time again, even though he was getting mediocre results. And clearly, Cam Ward is a very important player in franchise history for Carolina. They don't have their only championship without him, no doubt. But the time to move on was probably this year. They brought him back. you know, he had some good stretches, he had some not so good stretches. But if you're bringing in Scott Darling and you want to actually make a move, the upside is with Darling. Cam Ward's not getting better with age. It just doesn't happen with goaltenders. So if you can get an even split, or even, you know, if they go 1A, 1B, that's probably like the minimum you can do if you're Carolina. What you want is Darling probably starting like 55 games, 50 games.
I think if it's at the price of a third round pick, I think that's the intent.
So that has to be it. And if Darling struggles at first, you can't just go with Ward for the next six games. Like, you got to give him a chance.
You got to let him play through it.
You got to let him play through it, because, like, that's where your upside is. And, you know, Carolina, you look at all the good young players they have, it's tough because of the division they're in, but, like, they could make a run for a wild card spot next season. But they need goaltending, and they got to make sure that they get off on the right foot.
You're right about that, Ryan, about letting him play through things, because this guy's a battler, right? Like, he's a battler. He just keeps coming, right? So if he has a couple of bad games, you got to let him play his way out of it. It'll be interesting to see, because, you know, it's almost like the situation with Jonathan Bernier when he was in L.A. and then got traded, you know, and everybody thought, you know, okay, here he is, your number one guy. Well, no, he's not a number one guy. First of all, he let Jonathan Quick take the number one job away from him in L.A., and then he came to Toronto, and people will argue with me and everything, but I don't think Jonathan Bernier did one thing in Toronto to prove to anyone that he was a legitimate number one workhorse goaltender. And I don't think he's done it yet. Mm-hmm. He's really good for very, you know, short periods of time, and then it goes to shit for a bunch of games, and you can't have that from a number one guy, but you got to find out if you have it.
Yeah.
And you're not going to know with Scott Darling until you give him, okay, Scott, the next 30 games, you're playing 26 of them, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And that's my one concern with Darling, is the concept of playing 26 of 30 games. He's a huge goalie. He's kind of the Dustin Byfuglien of goaltenders size-wise, and also possibly fitness-wise. I remember we did our goalie issue last year, and we did a goalie rating system. We had 10 former goalies vote on the current crop of goaltenders. We did 40, so including 10 backups, rated them in a bunch of categories, and Darling scored really low in athleticism. Mm. So he's got great size, but he doesn't rate well in the sort of quickness, mobility, and I think that could be tied to his fitness level. So I'm very curious to see how he responds to a big workload. I do think it's worth finding out, but I'm a little skeptical about him breaking down. We've seen it with Ben Bishop, the big, big guys sometimes break down easier. So tough one, but it'll be interesting to see next year.
It will be, yeah. And I think it'll be good for Darling, because he, you know, I mean, he's kind of bided his time, and he was never going to, he's never going to be the number one in Chicago.
No.
So you kind of see where he's going to go with it.
No.
We'll end it off with some reader questions. Ryan Wargala says, should the Sharks re-sign Joe Thornton or Patrick Marleau? What I don't know is, because of the word or, does he say one or the other? Does he mean one or the other? Grammatically, that means one or the other.
Right.
But I feel like what Ryan wants to know is both or none.
Yeah.
Just what my gut says, but I don't know. What do you guys
think? Or either.
I'm going to say yes and yes. I mean, Joe Thornton, to me, is the consummate pro. He was born and put on Earth for one purpose, and that was to play hockey in the NHL. And he's such a great team guy. He makes everybody feel wanted. He's the glue that keeps that room together. And I thought Patrick Marleau was one of their best players in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I know that they've had their problems there with those guys, and I know there's some personality issues and that, but they could do a lot worse than Brent. Like, it's not like these guys are, I mean, maybe they will fall off the face of the earth next year, because at some point it's going to happen, and you don't know when it's going to be. But if you can get those guys to keep coming back on a series of 1 or 2 year deals at the most, I'd do it.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think I'm with you on that, with the caveat that you'd go to them and say, look, we want to give it one more shot, but if things go pear-shaped, we want to be able to deal you. Like, let's just say San Jose falls on hard times next year. There's nothing that really says they're going to, but just in case. Where it's like, well, you know, let us give the option of being able to trade you to a contender if we're not a contender. It's kind of a good faith thing on both ends, because I don't see a lot of prospects popping up in San Jose. And a reason for that is because the Sharks have been good for so long.
Yeah.
They traded away Goldobin. You know, Noah Rod's coming over, but he's probably like a third liner.
Timo Meier's the one guy.
Timo Meier would be one guy where you want to see him get some reps. Danny O'Regan has definitely earned you know, some time after a fantastic rookie season in the AHL.
That was the kid they got from Vancouver, right?
O'Regan they drafted.
Oh, did they? Oh,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But I think there's a place at the table for everyone for at least one more season. And like I said, you know, if you got to trade guys, I mean, you're going to have injuries, no doubt. But, you know, if you have to trade them, you do it. But as you said, I think Thornton, anytime you talk to the Sharks, they talk about the tone he sets in the dressing room, on the team plane. Like, he's just him and Brent Burns and Pavelski, they keep the guys loose. And that's an important thing, and you know, depending on what the cap hit is, if they give a nice hometown discount, as long as they're not putting the team in peril long term, it's certainly a nice move.
But the thing too with Joe is Joe Thornton is all about team. That's all he's about. That's all he cares about. That's all he lives for. That's all, like, you know. So everybody from the guy who from the leading scorer to the guy who washes the jocks. In Joe Thornton's eyes, they are all part of the group, and they are all worthy, and they all deserve to be treated. You know, so there's, yeah, I mean, that really, as you said, it really sets a tone for that organization. And, you know, it's one that I think, you know, you want to see a guy like him retire there and then kind of move on and see, you know, whether he's going to, you know, go into hockey at the post-career or whatever. But, I, you know, I mean, I'd kind of like to be able to see Joe retire as a San Jose Shark. And Marlowe, for that matter, too. He's been,
he's a lifer.
Mr. Shark.
Yeah.
I like Ryan always says nobody has more fun than the San Jose Sharks. And I remember last year, it was the Cup Final. It was before Game 1. And I was walking the hallways of console, and then a soccer ball almost hits me in the head. And it's Thornton, Burns, Marlowe, Pavelski, I think Couture. And they're not just playing around before Game 1 of the Cup Final. They're screaming, laughing, like going just rowdy. Like, it was like I walked into a frat party. And even though, like, part of me was like, man, are they too loose? But I thought it was really cool. I thought, like, look how bonded these guys are. They're having a blast. And this is like, they had already done their pregame skate, I think. Like, it was that close to the start of game time.
Right.
And they were having so much fun. So I do agree with that theory about Thornton being the glue and obviously still a great player. What I'm curious about is, I don't know if the injury he revealed to have, is that a strike for or against him? Because on one hand, it's like, oh, well, he was playing hurt. He could be even better next year. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's a pretty major injury. I think it was a torn ACL, if I'm not mistaken.
And MCL.
And MCL, right? So that's going to slow him down even more.
Yeah, but I mean, Joe Thornton's not going to be, you know, dangling around the ice anyways at the best of times, right? He's going to be a slow-moving vehicle pretty much by virtue of the fact that he's 100, right? So,
true.
You know, I mean, but you can't. I mean, his hands and his brain are still going to be, they didn't get injured. You know, they're going to be just at just as high a level as they've always been, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he shouldn't be the guy in San Jose at this point. Like, he should be a complimentary player. And as you said, with his hands and his brain, he can be what some people have referred to as a half-court player. It's like, he's not burning up the ice, but once you're there, he can still be deadly.
Yeah.
What you're looking for is the Couture's and the Pavelski's to step up and, you know, be those first-line guys at this point.
Yeah.
Thomas Hertl, you know, younger players like that. But yeah, I think Thornton still has value, as does Marlowe's, as you said. You know, in the second half in particular, he's very good for them.
Time for one more, a little fantasy question from Mike Shalen, or Scullin, sorry Mike, whatever it is. Is Connor McDavid better with the puck at full speed than Hall of Famer Pavel Bure? I say nay. It's a great question, and I always say McDavid, the only guy I've ever seen personally that looks as fast with the puck on a stick is Bure. But for me, just for sheer evolutionary purposes, I assume that if you took peak Pavel Bure and peak McDavid and raced them against each other, McDavid's probably faster, I would have to assume. So I guess I would say McDavid breaks the tie. But but Bure is burned into my brain. Like, he's
like,
the most exciting player I've ever
seen.
That's
his calling card, right?
Yeah, like, he was the single most exciting player I ever watched.
Most explosive
personally.
Hockey player, arguably, that of his generation, for sure. And, I mean, it almost hurts McDavid that he does so many other things well, you know?
Yeah.
So that no one thing like that kind of stands out. I mean, you know, you look at guys, you know, like Brian Trotche, guys like that, who get the puck and they cross the blue line and they gain speed, right? Like, it's an amazing thing to see. I would probably go with Bure at this point, but I mean, McDavid is, he's in a class by himself among active players without a doubt.
Yeah, it's funny. I hearken back to when McDavid was with Erie in the OHL and they had that tough series against Oshawa, which they had eventually lost to the Generals. But, you know, the Generals kind of clogged up the neutral zone knowing that McDavid was the big weapon. So what the Otters did was toss the puck backwards to give McDavid more runway.
Jeez.
So he would start his rush, you know, in his own end. It was like an old Esa Tiikkanen move, and he would try to cut through them from there. So obviously, you know, he's a player where we've known about his speed for quite a while now.
That's right. I remember
the move he made the other night on that goal was ridiculous.
And I remember watching him at the skills competition. Didn't he have his helmet off? And I remember being like genuinely afraid for his safety. He was basically like him skating was basically he was riding a motorcycle without a helmet. Like, oh my god, he's taking the corner so fast. God, I felt like a parent. Like, Connor, no!
Don't lose an edge!
That's right. Well, everybody, that's it for this week. And enjoy the rest of round two with Connor McDavid. And don't blink when he's on the ice. Thanks, guys and gals.